So we were on verse 7 the last week, and let's continue with that particular verse. I believe that we had stopped after reading the purport for a few paragraphs, and then we can... And that's on page 49. Yasmin sarvani bhutani atmaivabhut vijanataha tatra ko moha kashoka ekatvam anupashyataha. Translation: one who always sees all living entities as spiritual sparks in quality one with the Lord becomes a true knower of things. What, then, can be illusion or anxiety for him? Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Except for the Madhyama Adhikari and Uttama Adhikari discussed above, no one can correctly see the spiritual position of a living being. The living entities are qualitatively one with the Supreme Lord, just as the sparks of a fire are qualitatively one with the fire. Yet sparks are not fire as far as quantity is concerned. For the quantity of heat and light present in the sparks is not equal to that in fire. The Mahabhagavata, the great devotee, sees oneness in the sense that he sees everything as energy of the Supreme Lord. Since there is no difference between the energy and the energetic, there is the sense of oneness. Although from the analytical point of view, heat and light are different from fire, there is no meaning to the word fire without heat and light. In synthesis, therefore, heat, light and fire are the same. In this mantra, the words ekatvam anupashyataha indicate that one should see the unity of all living entities from the viewpoint of revealed scriptures. The individual sparks of the Supreme Whole, the Lord, possess almost 80% of the known qualities of the whole, but they are not quantitatively equal to the Supreme Lord. These qualities are present in minute quantity, for the living entity is but a part and parcel of the Supreme Whole. To use another example, the quantity of salt present in the drop is never comparable to the quantity of salt present in the complete ocean, but the salt present in the drop is qualitatively equal in chemical composition to all the salt present in the ocean. If the individual living being were equal to the Supreme Lord, both qualitatively and quantitatively, there would be no question of his being under the influence of material energy. In the previous mantras, it has already been discussed that no living being, not even the powerful demigods, can surpass the Supreme Being in any respect. Therefore, ekatvam does not mean that a living being is equal in all respects to the Supreme Lord. It does, however, indicate that in the broader sense, there is one interest, just as in a family the interest of all members is one, or in a nation the national interest is one, although there may be different individual citizens. Since the living entities are all members of the same Supreme Family, their interest and that of the Supreme Being are non-different. Every living being is the son of the Supreme Being. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 7.5, all living creatures throughout the universe, including birds, reptiles, ants, aquatics, trees, and so on, are emanations of the marginal potency of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, all of them belong to the family of the Supreme Being. There is no clash of interest. Questions, comments? So here, in the verse, it is said that for one who sees all the living beings as qualitatively one with the Supreme Lord, it actually requires some explanation, and Srila Prabhupada goes to great lengths to distinguish the differences and the similarities of the human being or the living beings to that of the Lord. Now, because Krishna is the absolute truth and we are all part and parcels of Krishna, Mamaivamsho Jiva Loke, Krishna says in the Gita. If we are all part and parcels of Krishna, then what is our comparison with Krishna? How equal are we with Krishna or how equal we are not with Krishna? Srila Prabhupada explains that we are equal in quality but not in quantity. So, when we discuss love of God, unless we have that same qualitative nature, you cannot love God. For example, in the material world, if you are a human being, you would like to love another human being. You won't use that propensity to love somebody else. So the basic quality for exchange of love between the living being and God is that they have to be of the same spiritual nature. So in that sense, the jiva or the spiritual spark is same as the Lord. But in terms of quantity, Hare Krishna, the Lord is infinite and the living entity is infinitesimal. And Srila Prabhupada discusses this at great length using two examples. What are those examples? Fire and spark, yeah. Ocean and drop of water. So if we analyze those, then we find that the quality is the same, but yet the quantity is different. This forms the basis of the philosophy, which is Achintya Bheda Bhed Tattva. So that Sanskrit term is a mouthful, Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Achintya is inconceivable. Bheda means difference. Abheda means similarities or non-differences. Tattva means truth. So that is the difference. The truth of inconceivable oneness and difference. That is Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Because Krishna, he says in many places in the Gita also, Hare Krishna, that you become one with me, or the living entity becomes one with me. In places in Gita, he discusses that. When he says you become one with me, is that there is qualitatively you become one with me, and not quantitatively. Because the Mayavad philosophy, or the philosophy of monism, they say that the living being can become qualitatively one with God and also quantitatively one with God. In other words, there is no difference between God and the living entity. They are interchangeable. But if they are interchangeable, how is it that the spark, the small spark, is being subjected to such material tribulations? Whereas apparently God seems to be saying that I am controlling the nature. A human being cannot even control his or her own digestive system. They can't even fathom how the food is being digested. What is that complex chemical reactions that are taking place in the stomach that is causing me nourishment to my body? We can't even fathom like how this earth is spinning at the rate which the scientists claim. I don't feel a thing. Everything seems to be so flat. Why isn't that, if you go and see the ocean, Pacific Ocean, it's a huge body mass of water. If the earth is spinning at that rate, why isn't the water just being splashed out of the earth? Just like if you take any ball and you spin it, whatever is the water on that, instead you can put magnets and other sticky substances, the water will just come out of the particular rotating object. But since time immemorial, it has been that huge, gigantic mass of water, which is the oceans of this world, are sticking to the earth. And the earth is rotating at like incredible amount of speed. Ain't that amazing? We don't feel a thing. Because I remember, I remember when I was growing up, I asked my father, So I read in the science book that Earth rotates at 36 miles per second, something like that. Wow, that's phenomenal. How come I don't feel a thing? Because when I go to the park and when I sit in those swings which rotate around, I get dizzy after some time. And then the Earth is rotating at such incredible speed. I asked my father, why don't I feel a thing? I don't feel as if nothing is happening. Well, my father said that he was a little learned at that time. He said that is power of God. And he also gave me a scientific explanation because I couldn't understand much about God at that time. Not now also, I don't understand much in any case. That's a different story. But he said, just like you take an ant and put it on a huge, 60 feet or 70 feet diameter ball, and then if you rotate that ball, the ant won't feel a thing. I accepted it because there was no way to prove. But in any case, the story is that how is the inconceivable things happening without the presence of God who's controlling it? These are simple things. These are observations of nature that give insights into how God works. Right? Yes?
One of the things that can be said is that many of these things are behaving this way because there are physical laws that are operating.
Mm.
One is the law of gravity.
Right.
The moon has influence on the water in the oceans.
Right.
So from a purely technical point of view, one can explain it that way. Of course, then you will say, who made the laws? And God will come into the picture. But the answers to some of these questions of why the ocean is not flying over and it is staying contained is because physical laws are operating that have been put in place. And only when some disruption occurs, like an earthquake came and a tsunami happened and the ocean water came into the cities, which is a calamity, an accident, there some event has occurred that has overpowered the laws that would normally operate. So one of the things that we do know is that there are laws in place, and then it's a separate question, who created the laws?
Right.
So,
that is true. Because if it is random, a theory of randomness and by chance, it's not like by chance the sun is going to come today and then for next 4 days we don't have sun. Then sun will come and it'll stay for next 4 days. There is no night, and then there is like another 8 days of no sun. Random, because since time immemorial we have been predicting exactly when the sun will rise, exactly when the moon will rise, and the moon is rising accordingly. So, as Rakshit Prabhu, he's our eminent PhD scientist who's like deep insight into science and the spiritual knowledge which he's been inculcating over the years gives a very unique insight into the aspects of world. In any case, these are the things. I mean, like, why is it that after summer there is winter? I mean, or the seasons are in place. It's like, this year we'll have all the summer, and probably for next year we'll have one winter, four summers, three fall seasons. It doesn't work. It's like very, very... So when we do this, there must be somebody who's actually under whose power or whose order this is nature is acting accordingly. And as Rakshit Prabhu rightly pointed out, the oceans, just for the heck of it, by chance, they don't like flood the whole city, flood the whole Bay Area for next 10 days, and then go back. Just chance, happens by chance. No, it's nothing happening by chance. It's so precise. And even the preciseness of the whole universal system give rise to the fact that Earth, if it moves even few inches towards Sun, the Earth would be completely fried. Well, no, it's very, very precise, accurate orbit that the Earth traverses through and maintains life. So it's, in any case, back to our topic, is that Krishna is the supreme power, and just through observation of nature, if one has a little bit of faith, if one has a little bit of piety, then one can understand there must be a God. Srila Prabhupada, he was talking to the scientists, and then he said that, those who don't believe in the existence of God, they are mad, they are insane. And then scientists were taken back. It's very harsh. I mean, those who don't believe in God are insane. And somebody said, Prabhupada, one of the scientists said, Prabhupada, insane is a strong word. Mad is a strong word. Can't you say they are stupid? Can't you say they are blind? They can't see things? Prabhupada said, Stupid, the madness is a sum total of all stupidity. So in that sense, if one has a little bit of piety, one has a little bit, then one understands that there is God in place, and then there are laws which are operating under his influence. And it's under his influence that everything is taking place so wonderfully. The sun is shining exactly according, because sun is fearful. Everybody is fearful of God, and everybody acts under that orders. Nobody dares to disobey God. Srila Prabhupada says, in the material world, a president is passing by. For example, a president of the United States is passing by. You don't get up to respect him or serve him or do anything. You're okay. It's okay. Same is the case with demigods. You may worship demigods, you may not worship demigods. But Srila Prabhupada says that if you don't worship or serve Krishna, then that man is thoroughly condemned, because he is acting against his own self-interest of being a natural servant of God. This person is condemned, because Asuryata, if you don't have faith, then you will be pushed to the worlds of faithless where there is more darkness. And people might question, well, if that is so terrible, why don't more people take up? It's because there are so many reasons, but the partial reason is that the material world, which is created by God, is so strong, is so powerfully binding, that a living entity cannot wake up to these questions unless by some good fortune or some pious activity, somehow or other, he comes into contact with some God consciousness. Otherwise, it's impossible. Everybody just goes on in their own set cycle. People are just, and unfortunately, whatever little pleasure they get from that existence, that's all in all. That's okay. I have to die. I have to work 18 hours a day. I have to pay mortgage bills. I have to take so much of stress. Stress pills, go to psychiatry. That's fine. I'm getting a little bit of happiness. I'm okay. I'm situated nicely in my thing. Don't bother me. Well, sir, please wake up. There is something more higher. No. You're bogus. You're imaginary. No, sir, there is something higher. There is something more positive. The binding of attractive, or the attraction, or the binding force of material nature is so strong that it wouldn't let go. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Daivi Hesha Gunamai Mama Maya Duratya. Very, very difficult to overcome my material nature, which is very strong. Otherwise, a small glimpse into the way the material world works would be enough to shake a person. People know everybody's dying, yet they are holding up like anything. Doesn't matter. And my father, my grandfather died. My father, kind of almost there. But I need to make money. I need to make a house. I need to make wealth. I need to build so many things. But you know what? They're all like, you know, passing. They're leaving everything behind. They're leaving it to you. Why do you want to build so much? That's okay, I want to. So the force of material nature. So it's very, very rare and a pious soul who actually comes. Why am I working so hard?
For what?
Yes, I'll just complete that thought and then I'll take your question. Because at the time of death, I'm going to give up every single thing. My body, which I cared for with massages, with spa treatments, with this, with like so many things, I'm going to give up my body. All those things I've done for my body is just going to stay here. Forget all the other things, like my car and other things. My body, which is my companion for so many years, I'm going to give it up. When one wakes up to this, then one will say, okay, fine. You know, there is something higher to life. Thank you so much. Yes, go ahead. You had a question, you had a comment.
Maybe it's out of context.
Maybe this is out of context, Prabhu. But I was reading the Gita. It says that you have to do your, you do everything so that you are promoted to a higher status of life also. Krishna tells Arjuna that if you don't do your war, then people will think you're a coward and you will go to, their estimation of you will go to hell and you will suffer in hellish planet, something like that, I think. So is that right? If what others think of you, that's the kind of where you go in the end?
Well, you are right. Let's clarify your statement first and then we'll go on to discuss that. Your statement is that, yes, in the second chapter, Krishna says to Arjuna that if you don't do your duties, or if you don't perform your prescribed duties, then you will incur sin. And other generals who have assembled here in the battle, they will think this fellow is a coward. You are talking about compassion for your relatives, for your friends. You are so pious soul, you said that, I'm willing to give up this kingdom. Let them enjoy it. I'll go to forest and I'll live by begging. Your sentiment is that. But when the generals in the battlefield have assembled, they'll think this fellow is a coward. Incapable person. So your sentiment is wasted in front of their criticizing nature. So all that he says. Then Krishna answers that same question in the Gita. He says, all said and done, as long as you have a body, you will work. You are bound to work. But what is your spirit of working? That matters. Not whether you work or not work. So when one lives or works for God or in that consciousness, then one is not bound by the reactions of work. Because you should understand that a person who like blindly works, he's bound by the reactions of his own work. It's like a cocoon, which like why it's like you the silk cocoon, it's wound up in a very, very, you know, strong and very thick thread, silk thread. Mm-hmm. Same way the living being is so tightly bound up in his own karma, it's impossible to get out. But when you understand the spiritual position of your existence and act in that consciousness, that work will not bind you to this material world. So you have to act. As long as you're in the material world, you have to act. Even liberated souls in the material world, they had to act. We hear from Srimad Bhagavatam, Maharaj Jada Bharat, he became a deer and later he took on the birth of Jada Bharat. And it is said that he was a completely liberated soul. He had nothing to do with this material world. Yet he was acting just to maintain his body. And Krishna also says, you act to just maintain yourself in this material world, then you are not bound up. So, yeah. So you can't... Because you understand this truth. Tomorrow I say, forget it. Okay, I'm a spirit soul. I'm not going to work. I'm not going to office. I'm not going to pay my bills. I'm not going to shop. I'm not going to do anything. I'll sit at home.
Okay.
One day you'll sit at home, probably fast. Second day, third day, you'll be back. You'll be just doing your own thing. Yes? Because you should realize that so many business people, so many high-stressed jobs, they say, I need a break. At a moment's notice, I'll give this up and I'll just go to Hawaii or Caribbean, some other place. I never want to come back to this place. I just want to give up. And then 3 days, 5 days in Caribbean, they are like texting their stuff. Oh, what happened at the office? Calling up. This is not correct. So that attachment, that strong push of material nature to work is always there. Because that's the mode you have acquired, and that's how you will act, even though you don't want to. So the material life in the Nectar of Devotion, it's mentioned, is bhog and tyag. And you enjoy for some time that particular position. For example, a vice president or a business leader, they stay in that position and they work hard, they do business directions, they take so much of stress, and then all of a sudden they say, this is too much, I need to go and play golf, unwind myself. 3 days of golf, that is tyaga, means give up your present position of being a CEO or whatever, go play your golf, and then 3 days later, I want to come back because when I see your position. So that's how it is. So this material world is always flickering. Bhoga tyaga, bhoga tyaga, bhoga tyaga. It's going on like this. Because why is that? Because there is no real happiness the soul feels in just trying to be in this material world. That the happiness of the soul lies in serving Krishna. And the soul feels that particular happiness in serving Krishna, it's such a transcendental nectar, such deeply satisfying for the soul. The soul thinks there is nothing better than this. This is it. The point I have been missing, my tendency to love, my tendency to be kind to others, my tendency to be charitable, to be generous, to be a well-wishing friend of others, all culminates when I serve God. That's the highest peak of perfection. That is the essence of my being. Whether whatever religion one takes, as long as it is saying that love of God is the highest, that's the best religion. Because the soul feels happiness. And in this verse also, we find that once you have that vision of God, you see everybody as part and parcel, not as your enemies. And you don't get depressed over somebody trying to, you know, take stuff from you or scheming against you or trying to destroy you or somebody being your well-wisher. You treat them equally. Because you realize that these people, nobody can be enemy or nobody can plunder anything away from me or take anything away from me unless God sanctions it, unless Krishna wants it. It's impossible. Case in point is we have Prahlad. Now, Prahlad was a 5-year-old boy. Who was his opponent? His own father, who was the king of 3 worlds. Now, you should understand the power of Hiranyakashipu. At that point of time, he had practically conquered all the heavenly planets. He chased out all the rulers, all the demigods from their respective positions, and he assumed those positions. A mere raise of his eyebrow, a mere hint of displeasure from Hiranyakashipu would send shivers into the body of demigods. That was his position. He had absolute control over everything and everybody, all the directions. One problem. His own son was a devotee of Vishnu. He couldn't tolerate this. I have conquered all the domains. I have captured all the directions. I have exerted my power on every living entity on this universe. This small boy, how dare he disobeys me? How dare he thinks that there is some God other than me? How dare he worships anybody else? And he tried his best to destroy his only son. He put him in fire. He got elephants so that he could trample over this boy. Now, just 5-year-old boy, their ribs are very, very delicate and slender. Just a mere push by a human hand is enough to break their ribcage. Here was mad elephants, numerous elephants, about to destroy this boy. They took him to the edge of a cliff and just flung him over the edge of a cliff so that he would fall to his death. Every possible method that there was to kill a human being was tried upon Prahlad. Yet if Krishna protected him, nobody could destroy him. The point I'm trying to make is that if Krishna is there to protect you, and if you realize that everything ultimately is happening by will of Krishna, then we realize that there is no enemy. Because Prahlad said this, said Prahlad never considered his father as enemy. Though his father was there just to torture and destroy him, he never said, "You are my enemy." And he, in fact, he said, "My dear father, there is no enemy in this world." You should realize that Prahlad Maharaj was a Mahajan. Means he was one of the 12 eminent personalities who showed us the path of religion. He said, "My dear father, there is no enemy in this entire world." If he said that to his father, why would he consider his father as enemy? Because he was seeing God in every single moment of his life. He said, "My dear father, there is no enemy. The only enemy, the deadly enemy, is your own mind which you haven't conquered. That is the only enemy in this world, because that makes you think that there is good, there is bad. There is happiness, there is distress. There are friends, there are foes. There is wealth, there is poverty. All these dualities just exist in your own mind. And once you control that mind, there is no enemy in this world." And yet, of course, Hiranyakashipu was demoniac and he couldn't understand. But this Isopanishad mantra says that Mahabhagavats, like Prahlad Maharaj, they see everybody on the equal level. And Krishna also says that that the living entities, the spiritualists, they see by the dint of their vision everybody equal. Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmane Gavi Hastini Sunichaiva Swapakecha Pandita Samadarshina. It says in the 5th chapter of Bhagavad Gita that those sages who are having equal vision, they see a Brahman, a learned person, they see a dog eater, or a cow, or an elephant in the same way. That is because they see that spiritual spark is just inhabiting that person. Just like if you go to a convention where everybody is a psychiatrist or a profession, there is a professional convention where everybody is like, or Rakshit Prabhu is, everybody is a scientist. Everybody is wearing different dresses. Would you say, this person is wearing black, so he is not a scientist. This person is wearing a white, oh, he is a scientist. You don't see everybody based on the dress, but you just see that they are who inside the dress. So similarly, the spiritual life is to see everybody as the spark, as a spark of God inside the body of the human beings, or animals, or microbes, or birds, or snakes, or whatever. On that point, Nilesh had a question.
So one point, most of the time in the Shastras we give examples like Prahlad Maharaj and Mahajans. We give the story and then we say we cannot follow them because they are Mahajans. And in a sense, we cannot exactly follow. Like, for example, Prahlad Maharaj, he was at the already perfect, and he was not, he was very confident that he will be protected by Krishna. But our stage, we are still not, even though we have a confidence, we are advised that don't go near the near lion or tiger, because don't invite, right? So that kind of, in the sense, what I'm trying to say is, these examples give us not to exactly imitate them, but follow them. And if we were to follow them, in what way we should follow? Like, to become like that, or to become like them, because it's not possible for, in the sense, it is possible, but not at this stage.
So, if I understand your question, how do you practically apply those particular teachings in your daily life, or in our daily life?
Or what is the purport of listening, in the sense, for example, Prahlad Maharaj reacting to Hiranyakashipu, because he was already at that perfected level. So what do we get out of that? Like,
one thing is, we take the sufferings which we are encountering in our daily life as the tribulations which are given by Krishna himself. Or we should realize that I deserve more, but somehow, by grace of God, my sufferings are minimized today. And I am grateful for whatever sufferings I get. I will tolerate them to the best of my capacity. I know I'm not perfect, but we plead, we pray, we beg Krishna to give us strength to tolerate those difficulties so that we may emerge stronger. Because, for example, if a person is trying to harass you, the immediate reaction is that of fury. Or some way, so the reaction being, I'm a victim. Or a frustration. God, why is this happening to me? So all these emotions, if one kind of cultivates a little bit of spiritual knowledge, they realize that, A, I am actually not enjoying or suffering those particular things, because I have nothing to do with that. I'm a spiritual spark, just like a person is taking a scissors and cutting my shirt, I am not actually feeling the pain. It is just my shirt which is torn. So in the advanced stage of spiritual realization is that I have nothing to do with that body. And the sufferings are happening because there is a body. And over a period of time, you will transcend those sufferings. The most definitive way to be firmly intelligent during those sufferings is that we think that is those things are happening by mercy of Krishna. I should be suffering more, but somehow by grace of God, I'm suffering less. The modern scenario has this soul which is missing factor. For example, a community, a caste or a race is being slaughtered by some powerful forces. Immediately there is sympathy around the world that, you know, there is something unjust which is happening. But nobody takes into factor that those who are being oppressed and those who are oppressors, they both are spirit souls. And somehow there has been interaction in the past that oppressed were oppressors and oppressors were oppressed in the past. So it's a loss of reaction completely going on. Nobody takes that into picture. So if one takes that into picture, then there is a sense of balance, there is a sense of equilibrium. Nothing is unjust, because nothing moves without will of God. So if that knowledge is there, if one is firmly situated in knowledge, then one definitely will get intelligence, strength, and grace of God to tolerate those pains. It may not happen overnight, it may take time, but eventually it will be there. Because of the strong faith, it will come. There's no doubt. In fact, Haridas Thakur was a Namacharya, and he was a very dear associate of Mahaprabhu, and he was being lashed in 22 marketplaces. But his position was, he never thought, oh my God, I'm chanting the names of God. These people are beating me left, right and center at 23 marketplaces. How cruel are these people? I should kind of curse these people to go to hell or something like that. In fact, as he was being whipped in those marketplaces, he was looking at the people who were whipping him and he was feeling compassion for them. My God, please forgive them. These fools, they don't know what they are doing. So just please forgive them. He was feeling compassion for his own oppressors. It's a very high level. Again, coming back to your question, they are very advanced levels. But we take inspiration from that and we actually hope, no, there is a definite possibility of that happening if we stay in the path of devotional service. Guaranteed. Because you should realize Haridas Thakur is a jiva soul. Very elevated, very exalted personality. Nevertheless, he is a spirit soul like us. And if he can achieve that position by power of God, why not we? That hope will be there. And initially there will be like, we falter because we are just beginning and we are not advanced. We will definitely falter, but we somehow stick, we pray, we never give up hope. Then definitely it will happen. It's a matter of time.
Point was that whatever formula worked at that instance, we cannot apply the same.
Correct.
But we have to think and also we have impurity also and purity. So out of impurity also we might take some wrong decision. And that, I mean,
to err is human. What can be done? I mean, like a man buys a house and that the house value goes like $200,000 in 3 years. What can you do? But the point, also the other point, you brought up a very nice point, is that one should understand or one should know what is my level in spiritual life. Srila Prabhupada writes that this particular vision that a Mahabhagavat sees everybody as part and parcel of God is only applicable to certain level of advancement in spiritual life. If you are not advanced to that level, then we act based on what platform we are, aspiring, hoping, praying that we progress ahead. So, as you said, because I see, oh, here is a nice tiger, you know, he's a part and parcel of God, he's a spiritual spark, let me go and kiss him, may not really backfire pretty badly, actually, if the tiger is angry or hungry. Of course not. I mean, like, if It depends. Also, at the same time, one consults the spiritual authorities, whoever it is, to kind of take steps, whatever it needs to be done. So that doesn't mean one is not like defensive or something like that. There is another interesting story, because what was this? I don't remember the entire story. If somebody can help me, it's Narada and the snake. Srivatsa knows the story. Let me quote from whatever little I know. So there was this snake which was very vicious, which was very cruel, and that's the nature of snakes. Pretty much, they are vicious and cruel, and that snake caused a lot of harm for no reason, with no provocation to others. And Narada took compassion on this particular snake and made the snake into a devotee. And after that, the snake was no longer a threat to the villagers or to the neighborhood. And then, since they realized that the snake was no longer a threat, small boys would start harassing the snake. They would take stones and hit with the snake. Or somebody would do all sorts of abuse, because the snake was saying that, I shouldn't defend or I shouldn't attack those who are harassing me. But the snake was really frustrated, because every day he had to face these terrible situations, either people throwing stones or trying to kill, and he was fed up. And then he came to Narada and he said, "What sort of instruction you gave me? You said I should be non-violent, I should be quiet, I should be calm. I'm done that, and people are just taking advantage of me, they are abusing me." Narada said, you should also have be practical. I never said you shouldn't be practical. When they are trying to attack you, you raise your hood and show that you are going to strike them, but don't strike them. That way the fear will be there. So based on one's own level, one should kind of act. And also in this case, the snake had the best of spiritual masters, Narada. So one should act under the guidance of spiritual master, then the path will slowly open up. But I agree, we cannot artificially go and imitate that. It's not. The other point, in Gita, Arjuna wanted to do that. Yes, they are fine, they are my cousins. I have to kill so many people just for my own enjoyment. This kingdom, I do not want it. If I have to sacrifice the lives of so many people, and I do not want the enjoyment, Kimno rajyena bhogena kim bhoger jivitena. Krishna says, I don't want. What's the use of enjoyment? I have to kill these people. I'll go to forest. I'll live by begging. Let them enjoy. And Arjuna said, you are a fool. Krishna said, you are a fool. You can't think like that. So guidance of a spiritual master is appropriate, because what is my own mental concoction, or what is my own sense of charity or morality or ethics may not necessarily coincide with what the spiritual side of the coin is. So a spiritual master is needed to kind of guide and balance out both. Fair enough? Does that a little bit? Yeah. Rakshit Prabhu had a question.
No, I just wanted to actually make a comment, because what was mentioned here is is one able to emulate what Prahlad Maharaj was standing for? Mm. And it may not be possible, really, to do that, but there is still some lesson that comes from that, and that is that he was suffering under the hands of his own father, mm. but at the same time, he was staying on the path of devotional service.
Right.
And so the import there, and I was reminded of a verse, the Tate Nukampam verse,
nice.
Where it says the same thing, that one may be suffering in the material world, there are no guarantees, and it's dukkalayam, it's full of misery. Yet, while one is suffering, one tolerates it, and one takes on to the spiritual path and keeps on it, ultimately there is liberation. Would we look at that verse?
Yes, actually, I wanted all of us to repeat that verse three times, just to memorize it. If you can, I'll say that verse and you can repeat after me, if that's okay with you. 256, it's on, yeah, on the Shloka books.
Yeah.
Thank you. Does everybody on that page? No, in the Shloka book, Srivatsa. 256, this book. Tattenu kampam susumekshamano.
Tattenu kampam susumekshamano.
Bhunjana evatma kritam vipakam.
Bhunjana evatma kritam vipakam.
Hridvag vapurbhir vidadan namaste.
Hridvag vapurbhir vidadan namaste.
Jivetayo mukti pade sadaya bhak.
Jivetayo mukti pade sadaya bhak.
Tattenu kampam susumikshamano. Bhunjana evatma kritam vipakam.
Bhunjana evatma kritam vipakam.
Hridvag vapurbhir vidadan namaste.
Hridvag vapurbhir vidadan namaste.
Jivetayo mukti pade sadaya bhak.
Jivetayo mukti pade sadaya
bhak. Tattenu kampam susumikshamano.
Tattenu kampam susumikshamano.
Bhunjana evatma kritam vipakam.
Bhunjana evatma kritam vipakam.
Hridvag vapurbhir vidadan namaste.
Hridvag vapurbhir vidadan namaste.
Jivetayo mukti pade sadaya bhak. My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past deeds and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. Thank you so much, Rakshit Prabhu, for bringing that up. Questions? That kind of comprehensively covers the whole. Yeah, because the whole idea is that we discuss it from many angles, and both just from the Shastra itself has many angles, and then there is the angle of application, which is what is gives the strength to apply that in our daily lives. So we need to discuss from all angles. Jnanam and Vijnanam.
I was also going to add that we do the Prahlad Maharaj prayers here, and we could definitely emulate that part where it says, in the core of my heart there should be no material desire.
Nice, so. Nice. Thank you. Yeah. That one thing we can definitely replicate or emulate or copy Prahlad Maharaj. We can learn the prayers and offer it to Narasimha. So, shall we continue with the East Upanishad? Oh, my goodness, it's 8 o'clock already. 10 minutes? Rakshit Prabhu, let me know when we can stop. I see. So at least let's complete this purport, because we were in the on page 51. Isopanishad, page 51, Srivatsa. Second paragraph. The spiritual entities are meant for enjoyment, as stated in the Vedanta Sutra 1.1.12, Anandamayo Bhyasyat. By nature and constitution, every living being, including the Supreme Lord and each of his part and parcels, is meant for eternal enjoyment. The living beings who are encaged in the material tabernacle are constantly seeking enjoyment, but they are seeking it on the wrong platform. Apart from the material platform, there is the spiritual platform where the Supreme Being enjoys himself with his innumerable associates. On that platform, there is no trace of material qualities. And therefore, that platform is called Nirguna. On the Nirguna platform, there is never a clash over the object of enjoyment. Here in the material world, there is always a clash between different individual beings, because here the proper center of enjoyment is missed. The real center of enjoyment is the Supreme Lord, who is the center of the sublime and spiritual rasa dance. We are all meant to join him and enjoy life with one transcendental interest and without clash. That is the highest platform of spiritual interest, and as soon as one realizes this perfect form of oneness, there can be no question of illusion, moha, or lamentation, shoka. A godless civilization arises. Can somebody turn on the light, please, for those who want to read? Thank you. The light for those. Thank you. A godless civilization arises from illusion, and the result of such a civilization is lamentation. A godless civilization, such as that sponsored by modern politicians, is always full of anxieties because it may be crushed at any moment. That is the law of the nature. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 7:14, no one but those who surrender at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord can surpass the stringent laws of nature. Thus, if we wish to get rid of all sorts of illusion and anxiety and create unity out of all diverse interests, we must bring God into all our activities. The result of our activities must be used to serve the interest of the Lord, and not for any other purpose. Only by serving the Lord's interest can we perceive the Atma Bhuta interest mentioned in here. The Atma Bhuta interest mentioned in this mantra and the Brahma Bhuta interest mentioned in Bhagavad Gita 18:54 are one and the same. The Supreme Atma or soul is the Lord Himself, and the minute Atma is the living entity. The Supreme Atma or Paramatma alone maintains all the individual beings, for the Supreme Lord wants to derive pleasure out of their affection. The Father extends Himself through His child and maintains them in order to derive pleasure. If the child obeys the Father's will, family affairs will run smoothly with one interest and a pleasing atmosphere. The same situation is transcendentally arranged in the absolute family of Parabrahman, the Supreme Spirit. The Parabrahman is as much a person as individual entities. Neither the Lord nor the living entities are impersonal. Such transcendental personalities are full of transcendental bliss, knowledge, and life eternal. That is the real position of spiritual existence. And as soon as one is fully cognizant of this transcendental position, he at once surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Being, Sri Krishna. But such a Mahatma or great soul is very rarely seen, because such transcendental realization is achieved only after many, many births. Once it is attained, however, there is no longer any illusion or lamentation or the miseries of the material existence or birth and death, which are all experienced in our present life. That is the information we get from this mantra of Sri Ishopanishad. Questions? Comments? Yes.
I was thinking about the question which Nilesh Prabhu asked, that how should we follow Prahlad Maharaj, and how Rakshit Prabhu rightly pointed out that verse. I was thinking what I heard from my Guru Maharaj, that we should always see what's the purpose of doing our duty, and what Prahlad Maharaj did, and in his teachings, how to follow him is also to follow his instructions. So a couple of examples I was thinking was that when Prahlad Maharaj was put into all these difficulties, like under the elephants, bitten by snakes and everything, then he did not give up his faith in the Supreme Lord. But even in spite of these difficulties, he was thinking about Krishna. And I remember that in one of the conversations, somebody was talking to Guru Maharaj, saying that, I have problems with my in-laws like this, they do like that, they do like this. I have so many problems. Then I don't know what to do. Then Maharaj answered in only one simple sentence. He said, Prahlad Maharaj was bitten by snakes. He was trampled by elephants, but he did not complain. So one example like is that we should be tolerant. And the faith that Prahlad Maharaj had in Krishna, of course we will not have the same amount, but we can follow in his footsteps by following his instructions the way he did, not imitating but following. Just a thought.
Thank you, Malini. Very nice points. So before we end the class, we... you had a point, comment. Okay, sorry.
Prabhuji, I just wanted to know that... like Prahlad Maharaj was a liberated soul, and snakes biting him or all those things are very less for him. But a person like me, even a little bit away from where the usual life goes, I tend to complain. So how do you not? How do we? I mean, we're all trying our best. I mean, I'm trying my best to understand spirituality and all those things. But still, there's surely going to be some complaint. A little bit out of sync. So how do we realize that? I know it's practice, but while doing the practice, we will still have complaints.
Well, if I understand your question, you're saying that if I am placed out of my comfort zone, I have a comfort zone, and if I kind of placed out of it, then I... personal realization I had was, or realization is a big word, but my personal own thought I had was that if I am grateful under any circumstances, or try to cultivate that quality of gratitude, then I feel that whatever is happening is less. For example, if something is happening, we can think that it could be much worse by grace of God. Or there is suffering so intense around us that what I am suffering is not that much, it's very little. Somehow, by cultivating that consciousness, it'll help me tolerate that situation. For example, if somebody loses a job, then one can say, I still have my limbs, my hands and legs are there, my eyes are there, I can lead. So I can do something. By grace of God, this has happened. But if I can, I'm okay. I can have that eternal hope. And gratitude really helps to overcome. It may not happen overnight. It's just like, because these... Other thing I realized is this: the habits, the thought processes are so strong, they are so vicious, that one has to break it one thought at a time, one situation at a time, one small suffering at a time. And gradually that improves. If... For example, this is another thing. It's common experience is that, man, why is there traffic today? Of all the days, why am I stuck in the traffic? But it's okay. I'm stuck in the traffic. I'm still alive. If Krishna's mercy is there, I have some tape going on. I get more time to listen to whatever tape of Srila Prabhupada or something I'm listening. I'm grateful that at least that this is just a traffic jam, nothing else. So it's one thought at a time, one situation at a time. But because of the overwhelming thought process, it will cover you. And then that realization kind of gets overwhelmed. But if you just push it and then try to, by grace of Krishna, it will happen. Definitely it will happen. It's just like pushing a little bit at a time. The fact one should realize is that we are so tightly bound up by the material nature, and it's by only... We can push, and the strength is coming to push only by grace of Krishna, because of our own spiritual life. Otherwise, people are not even pushing. People, those are conditioned by material existence, are doing their own thing day in, day out. They're not even trying to go against. Because when we take up to spiritual life, Srila Prabhupada says this, that we are declaring war against Maya. Trust me, war against Maya is something like Prahlad against his father. It's more difficult than that. So, but we get the strength by association of devotees, by our own sadhana. It definitely will get the strength by reading of Prabhupada's books. That's why, that's another thing why Srila Prabhupada insisted that we read books. Because when you read books, you see the world not through the prism of your own conditioned mind, but through the eyes of Shastra. Because you see that all these particular things are happening, and when we get the vision of Shastra, we see this world, all the troubles, all that are coming, as not really significant. The other thing I found is that mind tends to exaggerate. Mind tends to give so much of emphasis on our troubles that at that point of time, everything positive in life is just vanished out. All one sees is 100% black, 100% dark, 100% negative thing. But when we see through the eyes of Shastras, that 100% vision of mind becomes like 0.5%, because there's nothing.
Thank you so much, Prabhu. I like the point of doing one thing at a time. When you have too many to deal with, just take one thing right at a time.
So, yeah. So anything else?
I was just thinking that I've been reading in Bhagavatam about the fan thing. I keep remembering the fan analogy. When you turn it off, it continues, and then takes time to turn off.
Nice.
So similarly, you take up to spiritual life, still you will have a lot of things that you do which is not related to spiritual life, but
true.
It will come to an end.
True.
Thank you, Prabhu.
Thank you. So with that, we have Shraddha Mataji taking up the mic to talk about like 3 points. Right. I just gave the subject. You give the email.
Okay. I'm going to fill the volume email. So Vaishnava Prabhu had mentioned that, and he's looking forward to all these lectures that we have, that for each one of them we come up with, and he calls them drops of nectar, which they really are. And he's asked me to prepare a document and post it on Bhagavad Gita Yahoo group, which gives like, you know, the top 3 or 4 points that we covered in this lecture. So that's what I'm doing, like collecting your points. I just took some notes while you were talking and people were giving suggestions. So I have got some here, but this is not, this is just my list, but feel free to, you know, add or subtract. So the first one was where we were quoting Prabhupada, and we said that madness is the sum total of all stupidity. That was one. The only enemy is the uncontrolled mind. The third one is the real center of enjoyment is the Supreme Lord, which I just read from there. And the Parabrahman is as much a person as the individual entities. So it talks about the personality of Godhead. And the last one was, in your fight against Maya, take things one at a time, thing at a time. So.
Yes.
Those were them. So feel free to
add or delete or.
Mataji, it's only from today's lecture, right?
Yes.
So you do this every week? Oh, okay.
Tatta inukampam. No, I the verse itself is okay. Tathenukampam is fine.
The other point I wanted to make, which we had an earlier discussion, that when we are amazed at the workings of the cosmic manifestation, that we think of a creator behind it. So there is a creator behind the cosmic manifestation.
Thank you. Wonderful point. Thank you so much for tolerating me. And I'm sorry, I've been a poor substitute. His Grace Vaisheshika Prabhu should have given the lecture today, but because of some unforeseen reason, he was not able to make it. So you had to endure me today. Thank you so much. And the next program will be, we'll have Aarti, and then after that is Prasadam. ईशोपनिषद की, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की।